young, I'd listen to the radio.
This is the National Broadcasting Company.
Bob Trout speaking. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.
This is Mutual.
This is ABC Radio Network.
Well, hello and welcome to Same Time, Same Station. Your hosts are Larry and John Gassman, and this is Howard McNear Part 11. And we're going to hear some interesting shows. We're going to hear a Much to Do About Doolittle. It's an audition show from 1950. We'll hear Jeff Regan, Private Investigator. And we'll hear The Adventures of Maisie. But first, we're going to hear Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar, from March 14, 1950.
Time now for Edmund O'Brien as...
Johnny Dollar.
Get out of bed and get your gumshoes on, Johnny. You're going to be busy.
Who's this?
Ed Bonner, and I'm calling you from Hartford. Heard you were in Boston this week. Get over to the Elwood Faber department store right away.
Oh, call me later, Ed, would you? It's still 8 o'clock
Look,
in the morning.
Look, we got $300,000 worth of liability insurance on their fur department.
Sure, later.
Now they haven't got a fur department anymore. Just had 85 minks stolen.
What?
Edmund O'Brien, in another transcribed adventure of the man with the action-packed expense account. America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar to Mr. Ed Bonner, Mutual Liability Company, Hartford, Connecticut. The following is an accounting of expenditures incurred during investigation of burglary affecting policy issued to Elwood Faber Department Store, Boston, Massachusetts, or the 85 Little Minks. Expense account. Item, $1.90, taxi fare to Stewart Street entrance of Elwood Faber Department Store, where a police emergency ambulance was standing open. Two police officers were helping a man in a white coat load a blanket-wrapped figure onto the ambulance litter. I got my first information from the intern.
Ah, what's up?
Oh, I only worked the wagon. I pick up where everything else left off. This guy's name's Cronin. He's a night watchman here.
Dead?
Oh, about an inch away. We already gave him a transfusion upstairs. If the bullets don't kill him, the exposure will.
What does that mean?
Besides holes in his chest, he's also got frostbite. Somebody plugged him, let him lay in the cold storage vault where they keep the furs.
How long ago?
Oh, who knows? All right, Percy, wind it up. Let's get out of here. Go on.
An assorted group of reporters and cameramen seemed to be converging toward a freight elevator just inside the store entrance. I converged with them, and we all rode up to the fifth floor where two plainclothesmen from burglary detail stopped us. I showed my ID card, argued for 5 minutes, and finally got a frown and a thumb jerk. I walked across 35 yards of expensive carpeting through a cubbyhole office door into a large room. Standing in front of a huge refrigerated vault was a tall man in a black Stetson. His name was Delaney. We shook hands.
Quite a thing, Dollar. Some guys walked out of here last night with 85 mink coats. It's a mess. You got a cigarette?
Yeah, sure. Here you are.
Thanks. Store's going to be closed all day while the burglary squad goes over it with everything they got. You can do what you have to do, too.
Thanks, Lieutenant. I appreciate that. What do you figure, freight elevator or stairs?
Either or both. I don't know. They must have had a panel truck or a big limo in that alley.
Yeah, I noticed that on my way up. Could keep any car hidden from the street, and they'd be able to work without being bothered.
I got a man coming down to check for tire tracks, but it won't do any good. Whoever they were, they did it quiet, and they did it neat.
Neat? Yeah. But quiet?
You mean that night watchman, Cronin?
Well, there must have been some noise when he walked into them and got shot.
I hope he lives to tell us something. He's in tough shape.
How about this?
The vault? Just like the banks have, only smaller. And you can also hang meat in it. Not pried or blasted or cut into, just plain old-fashioned tumbler work.
Sandpapered fingers and all.
That wouldn't surprise me. Somebody was plenty good. Not even marks of a jimmy or pry tool to feel an edge. Just picked and plucked as nice as you please, and 14 little tumblers fell back. And the door swung open.
I thought that kind of thing stopped with Jimmy Valentine.
Yeah, so did I.
Who reported it?
A guy named Dmitri Stroganov, manager of the fur department. Come on. He's in his office now giving a statement to a couple of my boys. You can have a listen in.
I can say I asked you, gentlemen, that I just
hope... There's your pigeon, Donna.
How could such things happen to Dmitri Stroganov? Aha!
Lieutenant Delahanny.
Mr. Stroganoff, this is Mr. Dollar. He represents your insurance company.
Oh, your acquaintanceship, Mr. Dollar, above all else, I am glad to make. Aha! 85 mink coats valued at $300,000, coin of the realm. You have, of course, brought check for same, yes?
No.
What?
The adjuster will do that, Mr. Stroganoff. I'm an investigator, but don't worry.
Week by week, month by month, 14 years, I get two words from the insurance company. Two words, pay premium. Now it's Stroganoff's turn to say back his two words. Pay Stroganoff.
Believe me, Mr. Stroganoff, your money's waiting for you in a vault in a bank in Hartford where nobody can get it but you.
Waltz, ba, ba, pa.
Suppose you go right on with your statement, Mr. Stroganoff. We have to have it, you know.
Why is my 8 for mink in this direction? I answer you. Customer telephones Friday. Send over mink coat right away, she says. I send. Night comes, she wears coat to party. To breakfast next morning, she's also wearing coat, maybe egg she's eating. To party Saturday and to cocktail Sunday also. Monday? Aha. My husband does not like coat. I'm sending back, she says. Mink.
Real tough, Mr. Stroganoff. You can never tell what people will do next.
Dmitry Stroganoff, can tell.
Look, if you'll just answer a few questions.
This morning, even as I arise, comes to me a feeling of doom. Yes.
Yes. Well, now about...
Something is going to happen bad, I said to myself. And when I get here, no, even before I get here, I slip and fall. No, even before that, parking ticket for too long pass. No, even before that.
He went on like that for quite a while, and the police stenographer took down every word. His whole testimony typed up into 23 single-spaced pages. But only the following was of any use. Stroganoff arrived at the store at approximately 8:45, found the vault door open, and inside the wounded watchman Cronin, also the mink coats gone. Stroganoff notified insurance company. Stroganoff notified police in that order. Expense account, item. $1.35 for two ham sandwiches, two bottles of beer, all of which I shared with Lieutenant Delaney in Stroganoff's office.
Now, all kinds of heists. Jewels, trucks, cars, banks. But this is the best so far. A real 14-carat double-breasted A-No. 1 dilly, that's what it is, Dollar. How'd they get in that safe?
They just opened it up and walked in the same way you walk in your own front door, Lieutenant.
Yeah, but how? Who's that good?
Who? Well, there's the creepy kid. They always say he's that good.
You and me both know Creepy died 12 years ago at Dunamore.
And there was Dancing Dan Marathon.
Dancing Dan? He couldn't open a 2-bit padlock if he had the key. Who is good, Johnny? Who could do it?
I wish I knew.
Stroganoff's the only one in the stall who knows the combo. The only one. But I don't know.
But you aren't taking any chances. Didn't I see two of your men tail him out of here?
You bet your life you did. And by the way, didn't you put in a call to your office and have him checked on?
You bet your life I did.
Cop work. All the time we got... Delaney. Yeah. Yeah, hi, Richie. Well, give it to me. Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right, thanks. Hospital, Dollar.
The night watchman?
Cronin died 10 minutes ago without saying a word.
Mm-hmm. I was hoping he'd be able to fill in some gaps.
Well, he does. At least one.
Which one?
The other watchman's story about playing the radio.
What other watchman?
Al Reedy. Oh, I'm sorry, Dollar. Maybe you passed him up.
Well, tell me about him. Was he shot, too?
No. We questioned him first thing this morning. You see, Cronin made the rounds, and Reedy held down the office. Reedy didn't know nothing about anything last night. He was listening to his radio in his office downstairs.
What gap does that fill?
And Doc says Cronin got it with a .32. That'd fit. They don't make much noise, and a man leaning into a radio close.
Reedy, huh? Well, where can I find him?
Right here. He's waiting in the locker room. Why, do you want to talk to him?
Yeah. Mind?
Oh, help yourself, Dollar.
Thanks.
Oh, Dollar.
Yeah?
You're looking for $300,000 worth of mink coats. I'm looking for a killer. Don't be a wise guy when you do your poking around, huh?
I'll try to keep my nose clean, Lieutenant.
Yeah?
Hello. You Al Reedy?
You another cop?
In a way, yeah.
In what way?
Insurance investigator.
All right, Mr. Insurance Investigator. Am I supposed to tell you something that'll tip the whole thing?
No, Mr. Night Watchman. You're just supposed to tell me how things went for you last night.
Swell. I sat in my office from 10 to 6, went home, went to bed. Got picked up by two big flat-footed coppers at 7:30. And here I am. How'd things go with you last night?
You sound a little put out, Reedy. Or are you used to places being heisted where you work?
What kind of a nasty crack is that?
What'd you see in here last night while you were doing all your night watching?
Nothing.
No freight elevator moving?
No.
No sounds on the stairs?
No.
And you didn't hear the shots that plugged Cronin?
No, I didn't.
Why?
Because I sit in my office and listen to disc jockeys. The radio's liable to smother a lot of noise.
Wrong answer.
Well, the cops like it.
I don't.
Give me a better one.
I'll have to look for it. But I'll find it, mister.
Sure you will. Sure you will. But you'll never find those guys you tromped off of those coats last night.
You sound awful sure of that.
I am. Because you'll spend all your time on someone like me trying to make something out of nothing just to show everybody how good you are.
Reedy, if you're clean, you haven't got anything to worry about.
Well, maybe, but answer me this. Who's going to say when a guy's clean? When he's right or wrong? A lot of filing cabinets in a building somewhere? Answer me, investigator. Who knows? Who's going to say? Let me alone. Just let me alone.
I didn't know what to make of Al Reedy, but I did know I wanted to know more about him. At the personnel office, I pulled out his application card. It looked good enough, and then I suddenly put it back. I had a hunch, and I headed for the Middleton Safe Company. The president and chief designer of the Middleton Safe Company was standing under a blue light in the center of a newly completed vault. He seemed lost in the huge room of shiny, gleaming metal all around him.
Please excuse me for not receiving you in my office, Mr. Dollar.
Inspection day?
Something like that. Now, this is what I call the Big Haze. Beautiful, isn't she? Completed a fortnight ago for a firm of South American bankers.
You work on the safes and vaults yourself, Mr. Middleton.
Indeed I do. The drama that captured me as a youth. To compose and weld and conform metal into an impregnable stronghold. Oh, it's fascinating, eh?
Yes, yes, of course.
Fine metal, case-hardened, perfectly alloyed Ohio steel. Strength, Mr. Dollar. Strength. But then, I bore you, sir. And now then, why are we meeting?
So you can tell me something about safes and vaults, Mr. Middleton.
Oh, I dare say I could, sir. But I'm afraid you'll have to be more specific.
All right. Tell me about the kind of vault you manufactured for the Elwood Faber department store.
A vault for... Oh, yes, 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 the fur vault. Oh, yes, of course. What precisely do you wish to know about that vault?
How someone could open it without knowing the combination.
Oh, an impossible occurrence.
Have you read the morning papers?
Papers? What about them?
That particular vault was opened last night and all the furs taken.
What do you say? Looted? Well, that's impossible.
It happened. That's why I'm here.
This is quite a... Oh, dear me, Mr. Dollar. Of course, you'll want a thorough account from my organization.
Of course.
And I shall be glad to furnish you with any information that might be helpful.
I'd like to know how the combination was set and who knows it.
But I'd have to know the serial numbers on that particular vault.
Here, try these.
Oh, well, you're a very efficient man, Mr. Dollar. I see you've jotted them down. Well, let's go up to my office and look them up. Oh, no, 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 sir. That won't be necessary. I recognize these serials. D... 4536. Oh, D. Oh, D stands for Dana. And Mr. Dana set the final combination.
Mr. Dana?
My chief engineer for years.
And who else besides him would know it?
Myself and the person in proper authority at Elwood Faber, of course.
Well, that would be Stroganoff. Anyone else here?
No, sir.
I'd like to talk to Mr. Dana, then.
Well, I'm afraid that's quite impossible, sir.
Oh?
Albert Dana has been dead for 7 years.
Up to and including that point, I had a whole lot of nothing to go on. But by the time I got back to Boylston Street, heading for my hotel, things began to happen. A police car pulled up at the curb, and a familiar Stetson on top of a familiar head leaned out of the window.
Hey, Dollar, you?
Yeah, hello, Delaney.
Hop in. Just come by to get you. I thought you might be interested in a guy.
What guy?
The one we found floating down the Charles River an hour ago.
Who is he?
I don't know. But it looked like he's got the same enemies as a night watchman named Cronin.
Huh?
Yeah. There were two .32 slugs in him. We wouldn't have picked it so fast, only that's the second pair been through ballistics in one day.
And they match?
Like your two front teeth. The same gun killed the night watchman and the guy in the river.
Now with our star, Edmund O'Brien, we return to the second act of Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar.
I spent half the night at the city morgue and police headquarters with Lieutenant Delaney, examining the body they found in the Charles River and trying to identify him. All the labels were ripped out of his clothes and the laundry marks were cut off. We were left with just his physical characteristics and fingerprints. The mug file didn't duplicate him, and the prints didn't check with anything in town. So they sent them to the FBI in Washington. I got to my hotel at 4 a.m. to get some sleep, and I got it. Three of the shortest hours worth I ever had.
Dollar?
I'll tell her when he comes in.
This is Ed Bonner, Johnny. How would you like to be fired?
Huh? Oh, yeah, Mr. Bonner, sir. What can I do for you?
Turn up with 85 mink coats. What have you been doing since yesterday? Sleeping?
Bonner, I've run my legs down to my knees. Honest, I've been trying to find out something, anything. I've peeked into so many corners, I've got television eyes.
And I've got a weak heart. Unless we find those furs in 24 hours, we have to pay off Elwood Faber, $300,000.
Well, what are you going to do? Take it out of my pay?
If we have to. We'll start by selling your body to a medical school. Please, Johnny, do something.
Bonner, what's Elwood Faber's financial position?
AAA. Couldn't be better. They wouldn't steal him.
How about the fur man, Stroganoff?
He's always had money. Family.
All right, Bonner. I'll keep after it. I'll call you when I get something.
Johnny, don't take my shouting personally, but this is a big one. Give it everything you got.
I forced myself to get out of bed, take a shower, and get my clothes on. I started for the door and had no idea where I was going.
Aha, Mr. Dollar.
When somebody did my thinking for me.
To see you personally, I, Stroganoff, maestro of the Elwood Faber Fur Department, am here.
Do you have any news?
News? Every paper in the country it should hit. Twice. Never in my 30 years of association with that foul little beast, the mink, has anything like this happened.
What happened?
You wouldn't believe me.
Look, I'm pretty gullible.
Well, it's incredible. I don't blame you for not believing me.
Are we going to keep up this game, or do you tell me?
Don't get huffy with Stroganoff. I will tell you. This morning, wrapped in dirty cardboard box, is arriving at the Fur Department. Guess what? A mink coat. Incredible?
Incredible indeed. You mean one of the coats was returned by mail?
Right.
Well, that's encouraging.
I am not overjoyed. You still owe me for 84 coats.
Item, $1.90 for cab fare to Elwood Faber. It didn't make any sense that the men or man who committed murder to make the heist would return anything. But one coat had come back. And in the pocket, I found a small piece of slick cardboard. It was only a third of an inch long, but there were three words on it. Country Club Dance. I was lucky. The country club secretary had a guest list, and one name on it stuck out like the nose on Jimmy Durante. Patricia Reedy.
Yes?
Oh, Miss Reedy?
Yes. Who are you?
Name's Johnny Dollar. Your father is employed at Elwood Faber, isn't he?
That's right, but
is he in now?
Well, he's probably in bed. May I help him?
Well, I don't know. I saw you at the country club dance the other night.
Oh, were you there?
Yeah, I couldn't keep my eyes off you. Especially when you had that mink coat on.
Oh, the mink? Well, I...
Talk with this guy, Pat. What do you want, Dollar?
Some information.
Patty, will you make some coffee or something?
All right, Dave. Anything else?
Oh, nothing I can't handle. Okay, Dollar, what are you doing here? Who asked you into my house?
My job. I came to find out about a mink coat that showed up at Elwood Faber this morning.
Look, let's go out in the hall and talk.
Okay. All right, Reedy, let's hear it.
Now, don't go into a long song and dance. I'll tell you everything. Just the way it was.
And I'd be real interested. The way I figure it, you helped in the theft. You maybe even killed Cronin. You kept one of the coats, but you got scared you might be caught with it, so you sent it back. Your daughter left the dance ticket in the pocket.
All right. Here's the story, right down the line. I didn't help in the heist. I had nothing to do with it. I didn't even know what was happening. Like I told you, I was in my office listening to the radio.
Tell me, Reedy. You ever been arrested?
Well, Dollar, you're smart enough to find it out sooner or later. I serve time, sure. You might as well know. Lots of it.
Elwood Faber would be interested to know a trusted watchman served time.
Well, what'd you expect me to do when I got out? Curl up and die? I gotta live, too. I'm straight now, Well, almost. I had a wife and a kid. The wife died. You've seen the kid in there. 13 years of her life, she had nothing. But now I'm trying to make up for that. Everything I do is for her, not for me.
What about the coat?
Sure, I took it. I borrowed it. Before the safe was locked up for the night. I've been borrowing stuff right along. Whenever my kid needed anything. I always return them in good shape. I told Pat they let me do it. She don't know nothing.
That's kind of a strange philosophy.
I don't even know how to spell philosophy. But I do know this. That girl in there has a life ahead of her. Her mind's behind me. I got to give her every chance I can to look good, to act good, to use her brains, to meet the right people and go to the right places. Not just for dough, you understand, a millionaire husband, but just for a right guy and a fair crack at happiness.
Uh-huh.
Oh, you guys are all the same. You work from a little book, printed directions. Everything's black and white in life. Nobody's human. Oh, well, that's that. I don't know what you're going to do, but I hope it don't blast that kid's life to pieces.
Reedy, you should have thought of this a long time ago.
I don't want any lectures.
You'll shut up and you'll listen to me. I think I believe you. You're right. Maybe we do work from printed directions a little too much. Well, I can use a little judgment on my job. I think, for now, I'll forget everything you've told me and forget where that coat came from. Go on back to bed.
Go on, Reedy. Well, I didn't expect that from you, Dollar.
Reedy, I know what bad breaks are like, too.
Oh,
come on, come on. Look, you'll have me doing that in a minute.
Hey, Dollar, I don't go in for this stool pigeon stuff. I never have. But now I see it another way. It doesn't matter what you tell as long as you tell it to the right guy.
What does that mean?
I'm going to give you something. It'll take them at least 24 hours to identify the guy they found in the Charles River. Picture in the paper this morning. Well, I can tell you right now who he is.
Who is he?
Ted Gray. Worked in Elwood Faber about 6 weeks. Was fired 2 weeks ago.
How do you know?
Oh, I just know.
Personnel at Elwood Faber confirmed Ted Gray had worked there and was fired for insubordination. His address was 1432 Parkhurst Avenue, and I was over there in 15 minutes. It was an ordinary, undistinguished apartment house. No one answered when I knocked at apartment 12A. But the door was unlocked. Except for the furniture, the room had almost nothing to offer. I poked around for half an hour before I saw the phone numbers written on the wallpaper next to the phone. There were 14 numbers, and I started calling them right down the line. The first seven produced such things as Ling Chi Chinese Hand Laundry, the Happy Hour Liquor Store, and several other things that didn't have the particular information I needed. On the eighth call, I got the result.
Hello?
Hello. Is Harry there?
Harry? Harry who?
Harry Gordon.
But I'm sorry. You must have the wrong number.
Oh. Sorry.
That's quite all right.
Maybe he didn't know Harry, but I knew him. At least his voice. I called Lieutenant Delaney and told him where I was going. It was dark by the time I got to the Middleton Safe Factory. There was a single work light spreading a sickly yellow glow over the main floor of the loading platform. There wasn't a sound when I entered. That was too good to last. It went off somewhere in the darkness, and I dropped behind a medium-sized safe and waited for a gun flash.
Dollar! Johnny Dollar! What are you doing here?
Looking for 84 mink coats, Middleton.
I thought that was you on the phone, Dollar. How much money do you miss?
Not much, but save your breath. You're going to need it to run.
A man of your talents could do a lot in South America with 100,000 and a business.
I could never remember all those Spanish verbs, thanks.
Have you got anybody coming?
Lots of people, Middleton, lots.
If I hit you, how'd I know you weren't a burglar? You know, I'll never give up.
Then you'll have to shoot better than that.
You missed me 10 feet.
Oh, my windage screw is off. Is that the .32 you used on Ted Gray?
No, this time I have a Luger. For special work. I can first that.
Oh!
Come on!
Cougar didn't help you much, Middleton.
That's an ignominious end.
Yeah, you blew a good life.
Well, I could never find what I wanted.
Look, I know why you kicked the watchman over, but why your own boy, Gray?
He was in on the deal with me, but held out a coat for himself.
That shows you how wrong you can be. It wasn't Ted Gray. You see, Middleton...
Dollar!
Over this way.
You've been shooting up the town, Dollar. Now, what's this?
Jessup K. Middleton, he's your boy.
Yeah, boy for what?
For the fur heist and the bodies at the morgue.
How do you know?
Well, there's a safe full of furs on his way to South America somewhere. If you hurry, you might stop it at the port of New York.
Well, why would he kill the guy in the river? And who was that guy?
Ted Gray. He was the man who cased the Elwood favor job. He reported 85 coats ready to go. And when only 84 showed up, Middleton thought he was holding back on him.
Oh, well, okay, Johnny. Thanks for doing all the work.
I was just lucky, Delaney.
You sure were. You could have been hit where it hurt worse. Come on, let's have the ambulance doctor look at that shoulder.
This is the only way to live. Miss Reedy, you...
Make it Pat.
Pat. You know, you're great on your feet.
Well, what about you, Johnny? Dancing with your arm in a sling.
Well, I took the no-hands course at Arthur Murray's.
Pardon me, Mr. Dollar. There's a phone call at your table.
Oh, thanks, waiter. Come on, Pat. Johnny Dollar.
Ed Bonner, Dollar.
Bonner? I won't take another job for at least a week.
No, it's not that.
Well, what is it? Are you afraid I'll put a night out on the swindle sheet?
You aren't finished.
Not finished? Hey, you got the coats, didn't you?
Yeah, we found the safe down at the dock. Caught it just before it was loaded for South America. There were 84 coats in it, all right. But you know the one that was sent back in the mail? It's been stolen again. One's still missing.
Oh, really? Oh, that. Oh, yeah. Well, you know, Bonner, somehow I have a feeling that last coat will be in the mail tomorrow.
Are you sure?
Positive. So long, Mr. Bonner.
So long, Johnny.
Who was it?
Oh, nobody important. You know something, Pat? You look just grand in mink. Well, the coat did show up the next day and in the mail. Maybe she'll have one of her own someday. Me? I stuck around Beantown for a few days to get a better look at the Bunker Hill Monument, Paul Revere's home, and her deep blue eyes, which began hinting at wedding bells. So, expense account item, $11.75, back home, but fast. Expense account total, $384.16. Yours, truly, Johnny Dollar.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, stars Edmund O'Brien in the title role and was written tonight by E. Jack Newman and John Michael Hayes with music by Leith Stevens. Featured in our cast were Harry Bartell, Joseph Kearns, Hans Conried, Bill Johnstone, Howard McNear, and Gloria Blondell. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, is produced and directed by Jaime Del Valle. Join us next week when Edmund O'Brien returns in another transcribed adventure of...
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
If you've got a piece of string handy, you better tie it around your finger so you won't forget to file your income tax return. The deadline is March 15th, you know, and March 15th is right at hand. So to avoid penalties, file your returns promptly, but don't be in such a hurry that you forget to sign your name or attach your withholding statement. Now stay tuned for the adventures of Philip Marlowe, which follows immediately over most of these same CBS stations. This is CBS, where you meet Gene Autry every Saturday night, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
There's yours truly, Johnny Dollar, from March 14, 1950.
We're going to continue now with an audition show called Much About Doolittle. And this apparently is the second of two audition shows, and we don't have the first one currently. We'll see if we can change that at some point. This one is featuring Hans Conried, and the announcer is Ken Peters. So let's go back and listen to it right now from March 23rd, 1950.
The American Broadcasting Company presents Much About Doolittle, a new comedy series starring Hans Conried. There isn't much about Doolittle his neighbors don't know. But none of them has any idea why he calls himself Colonel. That's because they never heard him say,
"Young woman, who do you think improved the cotton gin? Why, throughout the South, I'm regarded as a colonel of industry."
Colonel of industry? Dad, you mean a captain of industry.
Don't be silly. Who ever heard of a Kentucky captain?
Yes, that's Much About Doolittle, a story written by Jack Crutcher and starring Hans Conried as the fabulous Colonel Doolittle. Thirty years ago, the colonel decided to retire and just rest. But he didn't like just resting, so he tried just sleeping, and he liked that much better. But don't get the idea the colonel lies in bed all day. Well, not at all. But sometimes he lies on the sofa, the porch swing, or the hammock. This morning, he happens to be snoozing comfortably in bed. And the big old frame house on Benton Street looks peaceful and quiet. But little does the colonel know that just outside his bedroom door, the enemy is plotting an attack on his rear.
Did you get your father out of bed, Marianne? I want him to go find a job today.
Couldn't budge you, Mom. The colonel must have been out with the boys last night.
Yes, until 2 a.m. I heard him sneaking in with his shoes off. Either those stairs need fixing, or your father has squeaky feet.
Well, I couldn't wake him up. He's having another one of his military dreams.
Oh, not again. No wonder he's always tired. That's the third time this week he's charged up San Juan Hill with Teddy Roosevelt.
This one's different. From what I could gather, he and Admiral Dewey are fighting the Spaniards at Manila Bay. Why, the covers, they're all over the floor, and the colonel's got his head under the pillow, but the rest of them is sticking up in the air.
What a position.
The Spaniards couldn't ask for a better target.
Or a bigger one. Hand me my hairbrush.
What do you want your hairbrush for?
Your father doesn't know it yet, but I just joined the Spaniards.
Well, I wish you luck. All he'd say to me was, "Remember the Maine."
This will make him forget it.
There he is, still in that same position. You can't budge him when he's asleep.
I know a couple of things that'll budge him.
What?
My thick hairbrush and his thin pajamas. Colonel, wake up, Colonel.
Damn the torpedoes, full speed ahead.
Lucius, I brought the hairbrush.
You may fire when ready, Gridley.
Aye, aye, sir.
Oh! Gridley, watch where you're firing.
Dad, what are you doing up here in the attic?
Shh, I'm hiding from your mother. How'd you know I was up here?
She told me.
Oh. Marry a turtle dove and she turns into an eagle.
Well, the eagle says she'll give you just 5 minutes to get out and start looking for a job.
Oh, threats, huh? Trying to intimidate me, huh? 5 minutes, eh? She doesn't scare me. How much time do I got left?
Not enough to think up a good excuse. Dad, what are you trying to keep from going outside today?
Me?
Well, you wouldn't even go out in the front yard for the morning paper. Now, that's a little unusual, isn't it?
Unusual? What's so unusual about it?
Well, I'm almost sure you won't see anyone else on Benton Street reeling in the morning paper on a fishing rod.
Yeah,
Well, you never know when you might run into a subpoena server.
Well, what would a subpoena server want with you?
Well, some bounder stole, mind you, the idea for my latest invention. He's suing me for defamation of character.
Well, did you defame his character?
Of course not. I just said he was a low-down, conniving crook. Didn't even mention his character. So if anybody comes snooping around here, don't let him in. Huh? You just tell him you never heard of me.
What about Waldo Boomer?
Waldo Boomer? What's that?
He's not a that, he's a who. Waldo Boomer is a boy.
Oh, did he get promoted?
Oh, just wait till you meet him, Dad. He's coming by to take me to school in his car. Gosh, he's real gone.
Real gone, huh? What kind of car does Waldo have?
Well, I think it's a Model A Ford. It doesn't have any fenders or doors or top.
Sounds like most of his car is real gone, too.
Oh, you'll be crazy about him, Dad. He's a dreamboat.
Yeah, well, I'm sure he's a fine young man, my dear. Now, if you'll excuse me, I've got to get back to work here. Hmm?
Is this the new invention you're working on? This old cannonball hung on a rope over the rafter?
My dear girl, that is not an old cannonball hung on a rope over a rafter. It is my new and improved automatic window opener.
Excuse me. Yeah. What's it made out of?
Well, it's an old cannonball hung on a rope over a rafter. But this is just a rough model I'm experimenting with. The principle is quite sound.
Does it work?
Well, of course it works. Watch this.
I thought it was supposed to open the window.
Well, of course. Don't you feel a draft?
Lucius!
Uh-oh, here comes the eagle.
Lucius, Doolittle.
There's a talking eagle.
Lucius, will you please stop fooling around with this nonsense and go out and look for a job?
Nonsense? Madam, we cannot consider the world of science nonsense.
No? What about that little whizzer you invented last week? You call that sensible? Who ever heard of an egg beater that goes up and down instead of round and round?
Well, what's wrong with it? You got all the egg out of your hair, didn't you? Besides, a man should work at the job that makes him happiest. Do I ask you not to cook and wash dishes?
No. You're very thoughtful, Lucius.
Well,
you don't even insist on helping. Now, will you go look for a job? There's one advertised right here in the morning paper that I...
Oh, yes, yes, yes. I've been considering this one here, my dear. Oh, yes, yes, here it is. Wanted. An intelligent man with ability to make contacts for important legal work. Apply Acme Employment Agency. Sounds like something that might challenge my executive ability.
That's not the one I meant.
No. Well, in my youth, you know, my father urged me to study law and go into politics. I should have done it, yeah. But by now, I'd undoubtedly be in line for a job in the president's cabinet. Possibly that of attorney general.
But, Dad, they just appointed a new attorney general.
Oh, really? Well, in that case, I'd have to be content with a seat on the Supreme Court bench. Sitting with the 9 old men.
And since they already have 9 old men, I'm afraid you'd have to stand up.
Tough luck, 10th old man.
No vacancy in the Supreme Court, huh?
Or the cabinet.
My word, I had no idea jobs were so scarce.
How about trying to get a job at the shoe factory?
Shoe factory? Madam, are you suggesting that I take a position as president of a shoe factory?
No, not as the president. I'm suggesting that you just take an ordinary job.
An ordinary? Imagine Lucius K. Doolittle, an ordinary vice president. What would all the boys I knew at Harvard say?
You never went to Harvard.
No, but I knew a lot of the boys there. Yale was more my speed. Dear old Eli.
Yale? Oh, golly, Dad. Were you a whiff and poof?
A whiff and poof? Well, a little on Saturday nights. But I always got home by myself. Oh, you mean whiff and poof? Oh, I wonder if there's an opening at Yale.
At Yale?
For a scientist.
There's an opening in the front hall for a door. Close it behind you. And there's no point in trying to sneak in before you find a job. I took your key and locked all the windows.
My dear woman, do you realize they are trying to serve me with a subpoena? If you lock me out, I may fall into their trap.
Maybe it'll teach you to keep yours shut. Now go and look for a job.
Very well, madam. I'll go and look for a job. But there must be an easier way to make a living. Confounded basement window, locked tighter than a drum.
Say, Colonel.
Hello, Motley.
Colonel. Huh? What are you going around trying all the windows for? Gertrude lock you out again?
What? Why, Motley, are you serious?
Well, did she?
Lock me out? That's the most ridiculous thing I ever heard.
Well, answer me. Did she lock you out?
Yes, she did.
Ah, we thought so. Edna says she heard Gertrude giving you the marionette about something.
Edna had a head out of your back door again, did she, George?
No, as a matter of fact, she had it inside yours. She wanted to borrow an egg.
I'd have been glad to let her have it. I suppose by now the whole neighborhood knows.
Well, I try to get Edna not to gossip, but she never hears anything I say. You know how Edna is.
Yes, I know how Edna is. Everything you tell her goes in one ear and out her mouth.
Edna says she heard Gertrude wallop you with a hairbrush.
Well, she did it while I was asleep, though. Sneaked around behind me and whacked me across. She whacked me.
Yeah, and you're the one who's always saying a man's home is his castle.
Well, I still say so, sir. A man's home is his castle. I just happened to leave my drawbridge down, that's all.
Edna says Gertrude's making you go to work.
Edna says. What do you say to Edna? Just yes and no?
No.
You mean you never say no to her?
Certainly I do. Just last night, some of the boys wanted me to come over and play poker. And Edna said I should stay home.
And you said no to her?
You're darn right I did. She says, George Motley, are you going to disobey me? And I looked her right in the eye and I said, no.
I wonder if Gertrude locked that dining room window.
Want me to give you a lift downtown, Colonel?
Oh, no, thanks, George. Marianne's boyfriend, Waldo Boomer, will be here any minute. They can drop me off on their way to school.
Waldo Boomer? Oh, Edna says he's a nice boy.
According to Marianne, I'll be crazy about him because he's a real God. Boost me up to that dining room window, will you, George?
Edna says Waldo's working his way through law school.
Oh, good, good. I like a boy with ambition. A little higher, George, huh?
A little higher.
That's it. What's he do? Watch at the movies?
No.
Jerk sodas at the sweet shop?
I remember. Yeah. Waldo Boomer's a subpoena server in his spare time.
No, a subpoena server, huh? A little higher, George.
A little higher.
You know, I shouldn't even be outside today, you know. I'm dodging a subpoena server next. Waldo Boomer!
Yeah, what's wrong?
Well, he'll be here any second.
Well, don't worry, Colonel. You'd be crazy about him. But don't forget, he's real gone.
Well, I may not be real, but I'll be gone.
For more about Doolittle. The colonel seems to be in an embarrassing position. If he can't talk his wife into letting him back in the house, he's in danger of being served a subpoena by his daughter's boyfriend. Meanwhile, a stranger has appeared at the home of his neighbor, George Motley.
Oh, how do you do?
Sorry to disturb you, Mr. Motley. I'm Officer Riley. I'm off duty today. That's why I'm not in uniform. You see, I'm selling tickets to the police circus.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'd be glad to buy a couple, Officer Riley.
Oh, thank you, sir. You suppose the people next door would be interested?
That's Colonel Doolittle. Edna says he's kind of a knucklehead. I'm sure the colonel will be glad to buy a ticket.
Well, thanks. I'll go right over.
Oh, Sean, living room window's locked, too. Come on, Gertrude, have a heart, my dear. Confound that whippersnapper, Waldo Boober, and his blasted subpoena. Wants to meet me, eh? Hiding behind my own daughter's skirts. Maybe I can scare him off. Oh, that must be heat coming up the front wall. Confound that window.
Can I help you with that window?
What? Oh, well, no, thank you. I can open the subpoena by... open the window by myself.
Whatever you say, Colonel Doolittle.
Oh, no, are you serious? Do I look like Colonel Doolittle to you?
Well, I admit I wouldn't take you for a colonel. Your back's at attention, but your stomach's at ease.
I've just learned how to relax, that's all.
Say, if you ain't Colonel Doolittle, what are you trying to get in this house for?
Suppose I told you I'm a big-time gangster.
No kidding. A gangster, huh?
Yeah.
Which mob?
Mob. Yeah, well, you've heard of Fingers McGurk.
Fingers McGurk, huh? You don't mean you want a Fingers, boys?
Just call me Pinky.
Yeah, well, in that case, Pinky, you and me better walk down to the station house and have a talk with the sergeant. I'm a policeman.
Station house? Sergeant? Policeman? Egad, this is all a terrible mistake. I thought you were that knucklehead Waldo Boomer.
Well, then we're even. I thought you were that knucklehead Colonel Doolittle.
But I am that knucklehead Colonel Doolittle.
Yeah, sure you are. I'm Napoleon.
Well, look here, Officer Napoleon. I am Colonel Doolittle, and this is my house.
And why were you trying to sneak in through the window?
Very well, I tell you the truth. I forgot my key, and there's nobody home.
Remember what Dad said about snoopers? Tell them we never heard of them. See you later. Oh, hello.
Nobody home, huh?
Yeah, well, I can explain about her.
Now, don't tell me she's one of Fingers McGurk's boys, too. Or is she one of his lady fingers?
Certainly not. She's my daughter. Marianne, tell the gentleman who I am.
I beg your pardon?
I said, tell them who I am. Who am I?
Oh. Well, now, don't tell me. Let's see. You're Napoleon.
Caesar's ghost, of course. I'm not Napoleon. He is.
Oh. Well, then you must be Josephine.
Now, just a minute, miss. Do you mean you don't know this old galoot?
I never saw him before in my life.
Marianne, are you denying your old galoot? This man is a police officer. He thinks I'm trying to break into my own house.
Oh, but Dad, you said if any snoopers
Never came... mind what I said. Just tell him who I am.
Oh, it's all right, officer. He's my father, Colonel Doolittle.
Hey, hi there, Marianne.
Oh, hi, Waldo.
Waldo. Boomer.
Dad, I want you to meet Waldo Boomer. He's studying law.
Raise your right hand.
What?
Do you solemnly swear that you're the colonel, the whole colonel, and nothing but the colonel, so help you Doolittle?
Are you serious, my boy? Do I look like Colonel Doolittle to you?
Here we go again.
Well, gee, excuse me, I...
Well, don't look at me. I ain't Colonel Doolittle.
Well, don't look at me. I'm not him either.
What are you all looking at me for?
Now, look, there's something fishy going on here. Colonel or mister or whatever you call yourself, do you mean to say now that you're not this girl's father?
Girl? What girl?
Well, don't look at me!
Dad, you just got through proving you are my father.
Well, I'm obviously an imposter. I deserve to be locked up.
You know what? I think you're going to get just what you deserve.
Thank you. No. Can you do a little? Wake up.
Oh, how's that?
It's me, Colonel, the chief of police. Wake up.
Oh, Chief Broderick. What's the matter, Elmer?
Well, I'm sorry to bother your nap, Colonel. But I need a cell for a prisoner. And you wanted me to wake you up in time to get home for lunch, didn't you?
Oh, yeah, yes, indeed. Why, thanks, Chief.
That's all right.
I can't get my confounded shoes on.
So sorry.
Yeah. Why is it you always go to bed with size 8 feet and you wake up with size 9?
Yeah.
Thanks for the use of the cot, Chief.
Oh, no, not at all, Colonel. Glad to oblige a dandy crackerjack checker player like yourself.
Well, thanks again for letting me stretch out here, Elmer.
You betcha, Colonel. Drop in any time you feel sleepy in the neighborhood.
Oh, Gertrude. There you are, lovebird.
Where have you been, jailbird?
Few kind words, madam. Have you ever been beaten with 2 feet?
2 feet?
A rubber hose.
It's known as the Chinese water torture.
Lucius, I've already talked to Chief Broderick on the telephone.
Oh, you did? Huh?
And he told me you were curled up under a blanket in one of his jail cells.
Oh, well, yes. Well, Gertrude, perhaps you're right, my love. Maybe I'm a failure at that.
Oh, of course you're not a failure, Lucius, dear. It's just that, well, when we were first married, you were so full of big talk.
Yeah.
And what became of all that big talk?
Nothing. I'm still full of it. By George, if you want me to give up the pleasure of inventing for a living, I'll...
You'll get a regular job? Is that what you're trying to say?
No, that's what I'm trying not to say.
Wait here, Lucius. I'll get my hat and we'll go down to the shoe factory together.
Yeah, but Gertrude, if I have to work for somebody else, at least let me take that job that's advertised in the paper. It just fits my executive talent. Intelligent man with ability to make contacts for important legal work. It's more in line
Lucius.
With my natural... Very well, my dear. Let's go down and sell my soul to the shoe factory.
Answer the door while I get my hat here.
Who is it?
It's me, Colonel. George Motley.
Oh, come in, Motley. I thought it might be that rumpus room Romeo and his blasted subpoena.
Say, how'd you manage to get back in the house?
Who? Me? Well, as a man of the house, I simply demanded that Gertrude let me in, that's all.
Then you don't have to get a job?
As a matter of fact, I hear the shoe factory's kind of run down at the heel. So I've decided to offer them my services.
Oh, Edna says they're not hiring anybody at the shoe factory.
Really? Then I guess they wouldn't give me a job either.
That's what Edna says.
Oh, Shaw.
What's wrong?
Nothing. Only don't tell Gertrude, huh? I can hardly wait to see the funny look on her face when she finds out they won't hire me.
Lucius, hello, George.
Hey, good afternoon, Gertrude.
Lucius, I've changed my mind about the shoe factory.
Yes, my... Well, I've also...
Go right ahead and take the other job, the one you wanted.
Yeah, but you can't change your mind.
Why not? I'm a woman. I have a right to change my mind.
Yeah, well, I'm a man. I have some rights, too.
Name one.
What are you laughing at, Motley?
You know that funny look you could hardly wait to see on Gertrude's face?
Yeah?
Looks funnier on yours.
Gertrude, have a heart. Every time I open the door, I expect to see that subpoena-serving Svengali your daughter's running around with.
My daughter?
Hi, everybody. Somebody talking about me?
Yes, Marianne. It was your mother's husband.
Huh? Oh, hello, Mr. Motley. I brought somebody home with me, Mom. Come on in, Dreamboat.
Dreamboat?
Hiya, folks. I'm Waldo Boomer.
Boomer! You mean you brought this lethal Lothario into my own house?
Oh, Lucius, calm down.
Calm down, yes.
Waldo, this is my mother.
Mrs. Doolittle, put her there.
And this is Mr. Motley.
Mr. Motley, put her there.
And this is my father.
Colonel Doolittle?
I'm leaving her right where she is.
I'll see you folks later.
All right, George. Goodbye.
Oh, Mom, I'm so excited. Guess what? Waldo asked me to his fraternity dance.
Good. I hope somebody trips him on his light fantastic.
Lucia.
Well, she's too young to go out with boys anyhow.
Too young?
Why, she's 18.
Then she's old enough to know better.
Don't be ridiculous. You used to go to dances yourself.
Not with boys, I didn't.
But, Colonel, I'm not...
Wait a minute, Dreamboat. Dad, what are you so excited about?
Excited about? Waldo, that's what I'm excited about. Of all the boys you have to go out with, you have to pick Steamboat here.
Dreamboat, not Steamboat.
Well, Dreamboat, then.
Oh, golly, Dad, I thought you'd be glad I picked a boy like Waldo. He's ambitious. Why, he's even working his way through college.
Well, that's just the trouble. Why couldn't you pick a loafer?
Your friends are too old for her.
But why couldn't you pick some lazy lout who lets his father pay his way? What kind of a job does he get anyway? A subpoena server.
Waldo, you're a subpoena server?
No, Marianne. Honest, I'm not. I quit that job 2 weeks ago, honest.
Well, there, you see, Marianne, he quit that job two weeks ago.
Speaking of jobs, Lucius, you were just on your way to answer that ad, remember?
Ad? Ad?
You better run, Lucius, before somebody beats you to it.
Beats me to... Waldo, my boy, may I have a word with you privately, son?
Who, me? Ah, sure, Colonel.
Yeah, right out here in the hall, my boy. That's it. Now, quit that job of subpoena server 2 weeks ago, eh, my boy?
Yes, sir. My father's helping me now.
I thought so. A lazy louder lets his father pay his way.
Well, I...
Young man, do you think I want my daughter running around with a loafer?
But you said that...
Bosh, never mind what I said. I'm looking for a man to work for me.
Work for you, Colonel? Oh, gosh, what kind of a man are you looking for?
An intelligent man with ability to make contacts for important legal work.
Oh, gee, and you want me to work for you?
Yeah. Well, when I say for me, I mean instead of me.
There's Waldo now. Hurry up with those hooks, Mom.
No, I'll answer it, my dear. I'd like to have a little talk with Waldo anyway. Waldo, my boy, come in, come in. Did you land that job I sent you down to get this afternoon?
Yes, sir, I did, but I don't think you're gonna...
Hi, Dreamboat. Am I late?
Oh, brother. Woo! Boy, do you look terrific.
Oh, to be young again. Like to be going along with you, too.
Well, come along, Dad.
Yeah, come along.
No, thanks. No, I'll stay home and find something interesting to read. You two have a good time.
Oh, gee, thanks. Oh, Colonel, here's something you might be interested in reading.
Oh, thank you, my boy.
It's a subpoena.
Oh, it's a subpoena?
Yeah. That job you sent me down to get was the one I quit 2 weeks ago. They took me back.
Hey, God.
Oh, and Colonel.
What?
You have a good time, too. Good night.
Lucius, are you up here in the... Oh, there you are.
No, one moment, my dear. You are about to witness the unveiling of a simple and revolutionary new device, My automatic window cleaner.
Yes. Well, I just called the president of the shoe factory, Lucius.
Shoe factory, egad, madam, at a time like this.
I told him you were an inventor, and he sounded very interested.
Oh, really? No. Man of vision, no doubt. He probably wants to invest in my latest invention.
He wants to know how long it'll take you to finish your latest invention.
Oh, simple. A child could finish it in a day.
So you can go to work in the shoe factory.
But, since I'm a grown man, it'll take me at least a week.
From Hollywood, the American Broadcasting Company has brought you Much About Doolittle, starring Hans Conried and written by Jack Crutcher. In tonight's cast were Virginia Gregg, Patty Chapman, Howard McNear, Gil Stratton Jr., Barney Phillips, and Ed Max. Music was arranged and conducted by Buzz Adlin. Much About Doolittle is produced by N. Gail Gitterman and directed by Nat Wolf. This is Ken Peters saying goodnight from Hollywood.
Much About Doolittle, March 23rd, 1950, the second audition show in that series. Don't even know if that show made it to the air. I've never heard of it before, so my guess is probably not. Speaking of the shows that probably should never have made it to the air, you're listening to Same Time, Same Station.
That's
we
not
keep surprising
nice.
People for over 20 years.
More than 20 years. 40
more than
years.
20 years.
40.
Yeah.
That 43 years, actually, almost 44.
We have surprised people, both non-commercially and on the internet. We can do that every week, and we can request your submissions for shows if you'd like. You can do that in a number of ways. You can like us on Facebook, Same Time, Same Station. Call us during regular business hours, 714-449-1958, or you can email us. Our last name is G-A-S-S-M-A-N. I'm John 1 Gassman at gmail.com.
And I'm Larry Gassman 1 at gmail.com.